Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, it's show 100 of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Thank you so much for watching and or listening and or both. We've got Richard Bacon on, which should be very, very exciting. He's an interesting man who has had to apologise for a lot of things in his life, which is interesting. But if you've enjoyed these podcasts, like we've done 100 podcasts, if you've never given us anything for these, in return for these, do you think maybe they're worth 1p each? And could you go to gofasterstrike.com/badges and give us a pound? If everyone gave us a pound a month, we would be able to make sitcoms, maybe films. We'd be able to put on, we could make a big film studio and put on all sorts of things, but we could certainly pay for all the episodes of this. And we're going to try and do As It Occurs to Me as well with that money. So if you like this stuff and want us to do more, go and make a small donation. There's lots of you out there. And if you all just make a tiny donation, that would really help. But like it's 100 episodes long. Just think about that. That's incredible. What a waste of time. Anyway, here we go with Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast and Richard Dickie Bacon. Ladies, I've just thought about what I'm going to say and I've realised how wrong it is. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has had 2 8-year-old girls at the penis level of his penis, naked penis. It was all right, though. It was. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello. Hello, Leicester. You're much better than last week's audience. They were all pricks last week. Every last man jack of them. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Or as some of the cooler kids have started, there are some of them have started because there are a lot of 8-year-old girls who hang around at eye level of peeing. They've started calling it Rahulasta Pather, mainly through the trauma of doing that. This is the 100th episode of... If you ignore the specials, it's the 100th episode done here in the Leicester Square Theatre, which is an incredible thing, so I think. And boy, oh boy, have we saved the best guests. We've had some names on this one, but boy, you won't believe who we've got. And we've got the best audience. We've got a lady here who did look at me when I told her not to look at me before. What's your name? Zoe, you got a Union Jack bag? That's very patriotic. What do you do for a living, Zoe? You work for a housing association, and I've talked to you last week. So you look very different. If you come in disguise, did you disguise yourself so that I wouldn't recognise you? I just saw the bag. I thought, I'm not talking. We had an embarrassing conversation last week. Yeah, let's not do that again. Let's talk to this man here wearing a very nice shirt. I'm going to just do the shirt. So keep your head off. This is like point of view pornography. We don't want to see your... We don't want to see the man's face. It's ruined it. So what do you do for a living, sir? What's your name, I should ask with?
Steph.
You're Steph?
Test software.
You test software? Have I talked to you before?
No,
okay. I just said that in a way that... And I should have known that you test software, because obviously, our friend from India... You're in back again from India? Is he back in India? No, he's gone back to India. That was last week. He tests software as well, so it's nice that... What's the best software you've tested this week? Broadcast software, yeah, it's good. That's good. No, that's my favourite. Boring, isn't it? Good. You happy with the way your life's turned out? Yeah, okay, good. So, Steph there, he's happy with the way his life's turned out, which is a good thing. It's a nice thing. You know, I can't say the same. This is look at what I do for a living. Just create an awkward atmosphere. Well, look, we're going to crack straight on. I'm very excited to talk to this guest. He usually isn't living in LA. You know, imagine all the people from LA I could have got over for the 100th episode. I've been trying to get people from LA and, you know, over into, because the big film stars. But he lives in LA. He's probably best known for his work on behind the scenes of Topless Darts on Ice from Life TV. There were so many to choose from him. It was... So many, you wouldn't believe it. Please welcome, it's Richard Bacon, ladies and gentlemen. It's Richard Bacon. Welcome. Sit down. Grab a microphone.
Thank you very much.
Richard Bacon.
Hello. Topless Darts on Ice, I still think is my best work.
What about behind the scenes at Topless Darts on Ice?
Well, I was filmed at the Bayswater Ice Rink, Richard. I'm surprised you missed it.
I did miss it.
And it was literally that. Does anyone remember Live TV? It was... More than I was expecting. If only that many people had bothered watching it. It was a cable channel set up by the Daily Mirror. It was in Canary Wharf. And it was my first job in London. Yeah. And they just had these big, bold ideas without any real money. They tried to buy the Premiership at one point. Right? They tried to buy, but they didn't have the money to do it. They had Topless Darts on Ice. And they also had a soap opera. So it was the reason it was terrible, and it used to be called by Private Eye Piss Poor Live TV. And the reason it was terrible is it had no focus. It tried to be BBC One, but it tried to do everything. So they said, we have to have a soap opera. But they didn't have extra studio space. So I would be writing my news bulletin, and they would be filming scenes for the soap opera around the news desk. And I remember writing a news bulletin, and next to me, two people were simulating sex at the end of the desk, which was being filmed for... the sitcom, which was called Canary Wharf. Right. And you probably have forgotten how the sitcom Canary Wharf on Live TV ended.
I haven't, because I've read your book, but tell everyone else.
It ends with Canary Wharf Tower being lifted into space by some aliens.
Which could have happened. I think I might have been on the first day of Live TV. I think I was interviewed on the very first day of Live TV. It was before all this sort of stuff started happening. Richard E. Grant was there.
Yeah.
Me and Stuart Lee were there.
I imagine it was probably on day one quite exciting.
It was very exciting on day one. Who knew what was going to happen? No one knew about News Bunny, which I didn't know was Ashley Hames, who I've played at poker.
It was Ashley Hames. Yeah. I took News Bunny down to, because I was a reporter, and a News Bunny, so Ashley was sort of a work experience at the time, wears the outfit. And I took the News Bunny to the state opening of Parliament. And... we got dragged away by the parliamentary police. They have their own police force, Parliament. Yeah. And I got dragged away, and then I got a letter from Black Rod, who runs both houses. And I've still got it framed, and it says that I'm banned for life from the House of Commons and the House of Lords. Thank you.
What if you're elected to become an MP? Would he still...
Can't happen, can it now? I know many of you were really rooting for me to run for Prime Minister, but sadly, it now can't happen.
Wow, that's terrible. Terrible news. So this is very odd. It's a big thing for us because this is the last day of your 30s today.
Yeah, it is.
So
yeah.
We're recording this.
So last night, I had my 40th birthday party and I've had no sleep. Well, a bit of sleep. I got to bed at 7 a.m. this morning. And thank you. Thank you so much. I think it's certainly worth cheering that. I never really know whether my life is quite glamorous or a mess. And yeah. So I had my 40th birthday party at a street food event in East London. I took over a street food event, okay. Which obviously at 40, you're too old to do. And I left so late. I got out there. I looked at my watch. It was 6:20 in the morning. And I thought, I was a mess. And I've got two kids. And I thought, if I go home now, they'll be getting up when I come in. And so I decided that I'd left too late to go home. So I just went and checked into the ground show. And then there were no trains home this morning. So I've just been hanging around Leicester Square waiting for this podcast all day.
Yeah. And so your life is
drinking.
A mess.
Yeah,
your
life is a mess.
It's sort of showbiz and then not showbiz. And then you come here.
Yeah.
Day of your 30s. That could be true of any of my guests in the 30s if I murdered them during the podcast. I'm not going to murder you during the podcast. That would be a good 100th episode, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Be exciting.
A lot of hits on
that'd
YouTube.
Get viewers, yeah. Yeah. Get viewers. Are you worried about turning 40?
Well, I thought I'd ask you about it.
I'm nearly through. I'm nearly fucking through.
It was a while ago.
It was. Well, I did a show called Oh Fucking 40. It was a big... I found it a big deal, turning 40, and I was very upset about it. But now I can't believe... You know, I really... Now I'm just thinking of myself as 50 now because I'm a year and a half away, but it just... I always do that, so I'm ready for the next birthday. I always just imagine I'm the next age up anyway, but this time I've done two just because I feel like I'm in my 50s.
So why were you anxious about turning 40?
Because, you know, I've made, like you, Richard, I've made a living from being a youthful, puerile idiot. And I wondered whether that's my pleasure. I wondered if I could continue into my 40s. As it turned out, I could. Yeah. So it was fine. I think it was, you know, I wasn't married, I didn't have a family, and I was a little bit lost and wondering where my career was going. So I think there was all those kind of things in the mix as well.
I'm not anxious about it. I remember my dad turning 40, and I remember he had a party. I mean, my whole family are chaotic and a mess, and we all kind of drink a lot. And he had an out-of-control... I had quite an out-of-control party last night. He had one as well, and at our house in Mansfield in Nottinghamshire, and the police came and they shut it down, and we're all really proud. But I remember I was 13, and when you're 13 and your dad turns 40, you think he looks really old.
Yeah.
And so I remember thinking when I was 13, he looked really old. And recently I thought to myself, well, he probably didn't look old. It's just the perspective of a 13-year-old. Mm. And then I found the family video of his 40th, and he looked really old.
Yeah.
And I've taken some solace from the fact that I don't look as old as my dad did when he turned 40.
But I think, you know, but in the old days, like when I was young, if you'd someone who's 40 or 50, they were like, probably guys would be 40 and put slippers on and a cap and sit in the chair and waiting for death. You know, there was it was like it was properly old. Once you were 50, it was like that was you could viably just sit in the pub in your slippers.
I'm always surprised by my failure to kind of moderate my behaviour as I get older.
Yeah,
like I don't really change at all. I remember Emma Freud, who presents what's that show on Radio 4? Loose Ends. She's on and presents Loose Ends, mm-hmm. And she read that very trivial book that I wrote. And she said to me, her main observation was, she said, "You just don't learn from your mistakes." It's a really smart observation.
Well, I've read your book. I read it very quickly. It's not that long. And it cost £9.99 on Kindle. I think that's over expensive.
But I literally got it because, you know, they give you an advance, right, when you write a book, and they give you the word count. I think I was like three over. Like, I just basically wrote as few as I possibly could.
It really doesn't read like that, Richard. It doesn't read when you're going, I mentioned him in chapter one. I can't remember if I gave his name or not. I'm not going to look back and find out. That would take extra time. It's a very entertaining book, though. It is very good. I can't remember where I was going with this now. Now I've been distracted from it. But
I was simply going to say that I don't moderate my behaviour. Even though I've had kids, I've got like, you know, a 2- and 4-year-old, and most people when they have kids, they change and they don't go out as much and they get in earlier and they. Oh, I just haven't changed.
Well,
in any
your life is a
way.
Series of apologies, it seems. That's. which is great.
Yeah, that's true.
So you don't learn. But then I think, like, a lot of the things that have happened to you don't seem to be, well, from your book at least, don't seem to be directly your fault.
Well,
I think a lot of kind of things, there's been misunderstandings and...
There have, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, some things have definitely been my fault.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can think of one.
But even that isn't real. I mean, we're not going to talk about it at length.
No,
but
I think
well, I don't want to. Everyone knows that story. You know what I'm talking about. So I don't even need. That's how everyone knows that story. But it's what was interesting about that story, and you sort of touch on it in the book. But basically, you were done over by a friend in that. So you went out with a friend and had a night out and had some drugs and stayed out all night. And then he sold the story to the
news of the world. So yeah he was a friend. You know, we're not still friends.
No.
But he sold the story to the News of the World, and the News of the World said to him, well, you need evidence, because we'd been out. I think we'd done 2 grams of coke. Yeah. And he said, you need... Because we're not on the BBC here. I could just be a bit more blunt, can't I?
Yeah.
So 2 grams of coke. And they said, well, we need evidence. And he spoke to Max Clifford as well.
Right.
And rest in peace. And Max Clifford said, well, record the phone call. So my friend called me, and my friend was recording. It's sort of like a forerunner to phone hacking.
Yeah.
Sort of the embryonic stages of phone hacking. But he recorded the phone call, and he said, so I'd rehearse. He'd say, that was a big night, wasn't it? Where did we go again? How much coke did we do? And I'd rehearse all the details. And I remember the worst bit was the line where I said, I'm still sniffing now. And that was like one of the, you know, you get those sub-headlines in the paper. And it was just a bit grotty.
Yeah. But then he got 20 grand for that.
Yeah.
It's not very much, is it?
No, but it was 98. Was it a lot then? I don't know.
Not to betray your... I mean, I don't know how good friends you were.
No,
but that's...
No.
I mean, again, like, when these... I mean, I think what's interesting about that story, and I think possibly why your career almost blossomed after it, really, is rather than it being the end of your career...
Well, it got me onto The Big Breakfast, which was
everyone felt it was unfair at the time because it's like, you know, why pick on one person taking cocaine in show business and aren't all the journalists taking cocaine?
Yeah,
and isn't Max Clifford having sex with children? So once you get, but it sort of felt so unfair. But then it's weird.
The irony of some of the details of his phone calls coming out. Do you remember the details of his phone calls coming out where he'd pretend to be someone else?
Exactly.
I mean, obviously, to a degree of hypocrisy in that lots of journalists take drugs. But I never.
And everyone, you know, why pick on one person in show? I mean, I was talking to last week's guest, Carrie, about it. And she, last week, I was so excited about you coming on last week, I was still talking about it. And, and you know, she was saying if it happened now, she didn't think it would even cause an issue, which I'm not sure if a Blue Peter presenter was caught taking drugs, I think it might do. But I'm not sure, because I think it felt like a bigger deal at that time. It meant people hadn't been. But now it feels like most people...
Well, I think what I've done is I've lessened the impact for other people, in a way. So I have enabled future Kids TV presenters to take drugs with impunity.
Yeah.
And let that be my legacy.
it's a good legacy. I don't know. I sort of find that fascinating, that betrayal for relatively a small amount of money. And then, you know, if he'd come to you and said, will you give me 21 grand not to tell the News of the World about this? You know, you might have said okay.
He must have been jealous, I guess. You know, we'd come down from Nottinghamshire together, and I was, you know, presenting Blue Peter, which then was a big thing, and I think it was jealousy maybe more than money to him.
Right.
But although there was that hypocrisy of, well, journalists obviously take drugs, for me it was pretty straightforward. I thought it was reasonable, you know, that they had to sack me. I'd been caught. You know, I remember going, they called me into a meeting with the head of Children's BBC, and she said, come to my office. So it was Sunday. Paper comes out Sunday. Midday Sunday, come to my office. And I remember standing outside the lift, and because I got there first, she came out, and she came out with the head of HR who was holding my contract.
Yeah.
And you're like, I think I know where this is going. And then I sat down in the office with him, and I just said, look, let's not waste any time here. I have to go.
Yeah.
So I know when you got to go sometimes.
Yeah. Because I don't know much about cocaine, so when he said 2 grams, that doesn't sound very much to me. That's like, I'm thinking of in terms of pick and mix, that's hardly anything, right? So it seems an overreaction, 2 grams, that's nothing. Hardly weighs anything, does it, 2 grams?
The headline was Blue Peter presenters 12-hour vodka and cocaine binge. Yeah. And it was a rare example of tabloid understatement, because actually it was nearer 20 hours, Richard.
But that, I mean, it sort of took a bit of a chance having you on Blue Peter, don't you think? I mean, you come from live TV,
yeah.
And it quite Boise, laddish sort of throwing. Was it Damon Albarn threw beer on you, or you threw beer on him? Or?
Yeah, he threw it on me, yeah. And I chased him down the street. I got involved in lots of stunts. We talked earlier about getting banned from Parliament.
Yeah.
I think they did. They acknowledged that they took a risk on me, and some risks, Richard, don't pay off. Inherent in taking a risk. It might not work out. And so I was replaced by a guy who was the son of a vicar.
Yeah. But most of them, you know, a lot of comedians are sons of vicars and sons of headmasters, so it's fine. No,
you should try and get a job on Blue Peter.
Like, would be very nice. I'd like to be on. I mean, no, there's a lot of nice Blue Peter. I love Janet Ellis, so I'd have loved if I could travel back through time and be. I'd actually go on Jigsaw rather than Blue Peter.
Right.
If that was a power I had.
Yeah.
I would go back to that. Janet Ellis was my favourite, but she was also mired in controversy. You took the heat off her a little bit because she got pregnant while she was unmarried.
Pregnant. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she got pregnant.
Is that worse than taking cocaine or better than
I think so. I certainly think so.
Because cocaine, if I means you can't have sex often, doesn't it? Because it makes you... It makes you unable to get an erection after a while, so if you take enough of it, as I understand it.
Well, I can confirm that's definitely true.
Okay, good.
See, I'm very free now, so I admit that I've taken drugs, whereas no one else really likes saying it publicly, do they? It's liberating.
It is liberating. Well, I think, people should just be honest about it. I mean, there were worse things going on in children's television, and let's just say... So you are from Mansfield. What I like about your book, you're fascinated with one of the same things as I am fascinated with, which is the tales of Robin Hood in Nottingham.
Oh yeah,
which was always my favourite. We used to go every tour and go around the tales. It's no longer there, sadly now. But what we liked about it was as you went, it was quite bad. It was like you give me a fact that I didn't know about it in your book, which is quite interesting. You maybe can relate if you can remember it. But it's like a little train ride around some bad chop window dummies of the Sheriff of Nottingham. But at the start, in the first room, there's a voiceover and it goes, "You are about to leave behind your humdrum lives." And I always felt that was making an assumption about my life. that I don't think they can make in a voiceover. I think my life is better than the tales of Robin Hood. I think I was about to go into a slightly more humdrum thing and then go back to my more interesting life.
I think you're absolutely right.
But I was very... It's a Tesco's now.
It's a Tesco's now. It's gone. It's really sad.
Yeah.
And these are the carriage that carried people round.
Yeah.
They'd got it from an abattoir.
That's
they bought it second
say,
hand
yeah.
from an abattoir, yeah. didn't they? And so it was these carriages that used to carry animals to their deaths were now carrying you into a more or less humdrum life, depending on your perspective.
Because there's one in York that's quite good, a medieval one. It's the one where they have the smells of the time, don't they, and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So that fact, by the way, that bit in my book, that was when I attempted a very bad... I tried stand-up, and it was terrible, and I did it once. It's such a bad idea. And the night before I did it, I interviewed you.
You did,
I was on Radio 5 Live. I had a show there. You came on the night before. I interviewed you in the Pleasance Courtyard. And you said, "It's a terrible idea. Stand-up's really hard and you shouldn't do it."
And I was correct. It happens a lot where a journalist, this happens all the time, like it's usually in print journalists, will go, I had a crack at doing stand-up. And then, A, sometimes it just goes well the first time because you're quite geared up and you've only got to do 5 minutes and often it depends on what gig you choose to do. You chose a ridiculous time to do a gig, which was at the end of a Reg D. Hunter. He'd already done 90 minutes, hadn't he?
And quite a big venue. Was it the other venue?
Yeah, like
it?
An 800-seat venue of people who hadn't come to see you, had already seen the show they wanted to see.
They were drunk.
Apparently not enjoyed it all that much anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And then you come on and do, you meant to do 5 and you did 13. And I'm sure I'd have given you the advice, learn what you're doing and don't do anything else and don't ad-lib and do the jokes and fuck off.
And it was live on the radio, so you had all those sort of annoying restrictions of being live on BBC Radio. I mean, it was flawed in so many ways. And it was kind of overwhelming, and then my memory started, so I just lost what was going on, and it was awful. And then what was good about the radio show was I came off stage, thank you, good night. I didn't do a mic drop, but I walked off stage, there was some polite applause, went back to my little studio, and we did a phone-in, which was, how did you think it went? The answer was terrible.
It was brave to do that.
I thought when I interviewed you, I remember now, the night before when I interviewed you in the Pleasance Courtyard, I thought you seemed a bit annoyed that I was even attempting it. Like, because it is hard stand-up and it is a craft and you have to practice it. And I think were you annoyed?
I don't think I was annoyed. I don't think I'm annoyed at you having to go because you're funny and I think that's kind of an interesting thing to do. I've done it slightly insulting that people think it would be that easy. So that often happens, but you know, I think that of all those talent shows on TV as well, they would never do. Do you want to be a TV executive superstar thing? Would they, where you come on and choose the TV? Because they go, oh, no, that's a very hard job to do that. But oh yeah, do you want to be a singer? Yeah, go and have a go go and have a crack and then do it. And so I think any of those things that sort of, I think it's stupid because you're cutting. I think with the X Factor and stuff, you should be building up to becoming a singer, which I think many of them are anyway, and then they're picked out of a group, aren't they? But you know, just try and get instant success, which I know isn't what you were trying to do.
No, not at all. But why I felt slightly sad that I thought you were annoyed with me is because I thought you were annoyed because you thought maybe I think stand-up is easy. And actually, even before that experience, I had a lot of respect for stand-up. And I'm aware that it's a hard job.
Yeah.
It's just a hard job, stand-up.
I just thought it would definitely go badly. But I can't really remember the interview, so I think that's all. I can remember being in the Pleasance Courtyard. I can't remember what I said, but I thought you were stupid. That's what your whole life... That's what your life... is.
Sort of true.
But so you worked in McDonald's in Mansfield?
Yeah.
Then you were a youngster before you...
Yeah, I worked in McDonald's in Mansfield. And that was where my girlfriend dumped me at McDonald's in Mansfield. I was serving on the till and it was quite callous. I mean, she came down and she actually let me start the order. So I think, one, why don't you wait till I'm off shift? But she queued up, gets to the front... started the order, which I don't understand. She'd like, I have fries and a milkshake. And then she said, oh, listen, by the way, I've been thinking, I don't think it's working out. I was like, I'm sorry, you what? She said, no, I just don't think it's working out. I think we should just call it a day. And I'm like, so do you still want these fries? And then I sort of gave her the food and she paid. And I went into the back room and cried my eyes out. I sat on a box of gherkins. Or as McDonald's calls them, pickles, and cried.
It was considerate of you because they're quite salty anyway, so it would not affect the taste of the burgers. That is.
Mansfield is quite a rough town, which has been quite good for our family because my dad's a criminal defence lawyer. But there's a lot of crime. You would often have to go to court as a witness when you worked at McDonald's in Mansfield because people would just have fights. And I did take someone's order. This is not an exaggeration. A guy was having a fight with another guy and he'd got the other chap in a headlock and he was banging his head against the counter in front of me whilst trying to give me an order.
And did the guy who was having his head banged against it try and give an order as well?
I don't like strawberry milkshake.
I'm going to give you an emergency question that I've changed especially for you. I've made it slightly different. Would you rather have a hand made out of bacon or a cock made out of herring? And when I say that, the cock will actually be a living herring. The tail will be... you'll still have testicles, but the tail will be here.
Yeah.
And then it'll just be a big flapping. I mean, it'll be big. It's a big fish, the herring. Flapping around. Or you can have a handmade of bacon, you can eat bacon, and it'll grow back, and you can eat bacon anytime. Or you can have a cock that is a live herring. Right? And then, you know, I would think that would have some advantages. Well, just, you know, thrashing. It'd be quite exciting to make love with someone with that, wouldn't it? They would enjoy the experience. Well, I would imagine. I'm not a woman, but I'd imagine that would be thrashing around.
There is a very clear answer to this, which is you'd have the handmade of bacon because herring is a very particular taste. You know, most people don't like herring, whether it's a live herring, a pickled herring, a grilled herring.
I don't think you get much oral sex with
that. No, that's the point.
So it's not. It's a lie. It's a raw herring.
That's true. I mean,
maybe from some Icelandic and Scandinavian people would enjoy that.
Yeah, but that's true. But if what you're saying is, if you like oral sex, and most people do, why would you want to only limit the possibility of oral sex to a handful of Icelandic people?
Well, that's true.
So it's a handmade of bacon.
Yeah. Be nice. It'd be good, wouldn't it, having a handmade of bacon?
Well, bacon is delicious.
It is. And then you'd be able to go, I'm Richard Bacon, and you could wave. And that would be like your gimmick. People would remember you because of the bacon thing. Well, there was ever a problem at school that you
should have worked at Live TV. That's the sort of idea they commission.
Was ever a problem at school for you being called Dick Bacon?
No, you would have thought so.
Yeah, because I would have thought Dick Herring would have the same. We should do a double act. Could call it the two Richards.
Yeah, that's quite good.
Or herring and bacon.
I think that's all right.
It's like a nice. It's like
we just put a whole band together of people who's got food as a surname, right? We could have a massive. Like Annika Rice. We get it in there, and I can't think of anyone else.
Tim Curry.
Bang.
Yeah. Simon Arctic Roll. He would be good. Can you breathe out of your eye? Can you really breathe out of your eye?
Yeah, I can try it now. I
mean, let's do it.
Let me just have to clear my eye.
I didn't give you any warning about this to prep. I didn't know there would be.
I've not showered today because I got to bed at 7 a.m.
I know, you don't need to tell me. I can smell that herring penis a mile off.
It is working. I don't know whether you'll be able to hear it. Let's try it. Thanks. Oh, at last, we've uncovered his talent.
Where's the air going into when you do that? Does it come out the corner?
I think it's the same defect as that. Remember the girl who could cry milk on TFI Friday? I think it's basically the same thing.
Wow.
And when I was at school, I was quite a cheeky kid at school.
Yeah.
And I discovered it because my friends make each other laugh or take the mickey out of the teachers. And I would hold my nose to disguise my laugh. So I thought this was a way to like not laugh out loud.
Right.
And then this air would shoot out my eye.
Wow.
And that then would attract the teacher's attention. But that's how I discovered it.
I've got a squeaky on. One of my eyes squeaks. Let's see if it... But the other eye doesn't.
That's actually quite loud.
I don't know. If anyone knows if that's serious... It's always been the... It's really weird, isn't it?
It sounds like there's like a moving, a loose metal part in your eye, which does sound serious.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll find out, won't we, eventually.
We've got defective eyes and food as surnames. And we're both called Richard.
This is working.
We've really hit it off.
I do a feature that you featured in quite a lot called Desert Island Dicks.
Right.
Where you have to name the eight Richards you take to a desert island. It's quite a tortuous process.
I mean, it sounds quite long. Do you want to try it?
Yeah, can you give it a go? You're already there, I'm already there. Because I'm the luxury rich. So
I'd take Richard Dawkins.
Yeah, would you? I mean, I'm getting...
No, I'm not. I'm like the backlash to the backlash. I think there's a thing now because we're both atheists and we've talked about being atheists on the radio a lot. But I've decided I want to defend Richard Dawkins because there's a thing now. If you're an atheist, the thing you do is you say, "I'm an atheist." Oh, but that Richard Dawkins. Whereas, tell me one thing you disagree with in The God Delusion. There's not one thing.
I don't know. I love his book. I love his books. I prefer Stephen Jay Gould, who I think is more of a human being. Strange automaton.
Yeah, but he's called Stephen, so he can't.
That's true. He can't come. But I don't like it. If you should take him to a desert island, it means he wouldn't go on Twitter anymore, which would be good. Because I just don't like his Twitter feed.
His Twitter's a bit weird. But I think that he's had a huge impact on the perceptions of faith. And I think he's quite brave, and I quite admire him.
I do. That's why I just wish he would shut up about Islamophobia and retweeting his own praise.
What did he say last year? I interviewed him on stage at the Cheltenham Science Festival. And he said he was talking about... He basically said you shouldn't really... You can tell your kids about Santa, but you should also introduce some scepticism into it. Which he was quite rational the way he explained it. And I got to see how his life works. And the next day, all the papers went for him with the headlines, "First he killed God, now he's going after Santa."
Yeah.
But I remember him saying to me, he said, "Look, the thing is, Richard, I know you've got a son, Arthur, and my son at this point was 3, I think." And he said, "So if you take the story of the princess turning into a frog, you know," he said, "Richard, by all means, Richard,
read the story to him of the princess turning into a frog, but at the end of it, say to him, it's not impossible that a princess could turn into a frog. It's never been witnessed, and it is thus statistically unlikely that it will ever happen.
And it would take probably a trillion years of evolution, backwards evolution, to get there. Yeah, he's a dick. So he belongs on Desert Island Dicks. Dicks, that's one. Seven to go.
This is a torturous process,
it is torturous.
Isn't it?
Because also, because I went to bed at 7 a.m, I can't even really think of any more.
I know,
Richards.
That's what's good can about it. So, I mean, you think someone called Richard would know, have loads of Richards. I can think of loads, because, so, you know, I'm prepped for this.
Do they have to be alive?
Nope.
Richard Dimbleby.
Okay. Is that the father, the older?
Yeah, David's father. Yeah. First reporter into Belsen at the end of the war. I mean, he's an amazing broadcaster, Richard. And I'm more Richard May. I'm only saying Richard Mady because he's come into my head.
Yeah. That's not that you can't choose just... Can't just start naming people called Richard. It's got to be the eight Richards you would take to a desert island. There has to be reasoning.
To be fair, that does seem to me to be the premise of the feature. Because no one has a capacity to remember more than eight Richards in their head anyway. So all you're going to do is name Richards.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can play it that way if you want, but it will be against... It's hard, isn't it? I mentioned this in the last podcast, but I enjoyed when you had a polyp on your throat.
Yeah. I did, yeah.
I enjoyed the fact that someone at the Daily Express, A, turned it into a story.
Yeah.
That you were having, and then you talked about it on your radio show, and a man said on the Daily Express page, I don't spend more than £130 a year on a licence fee to listen to Richard Bacon prattle on about his ill health. Which I thought was, you know, short-sighted of him in terms of that isn't all you could listen to something else on the BBC. We're quite good if it cost £130 a year for that service. Would you consider charging £130 to people per year, and then they can listen to you prattle on about your ill health.
So in his head, the entirety of the license fee has been funneled into that, into 90 seconds where I talked about a polyp, which I talked about because my voice sounded weird, therefore it needed explaining on the radio. But that was so a polyp is where you sort of rupture not quite a blood clot, but you cause a tear on your vocal cords. Nice. And I got it by singing at a Take That concert. It was Never Forget. Right. Do you remember Never Forget? It was a New Year at the O2.
Ironically, I don't remember it.
But I was singing very loudly and I ruptured my vocal cord. And I had an operation. And as the surgeon was putting me under, and the needle goes in and they go countdown from 10. And I said to him, it's going to be right. And as I was going under, he said, there's about a 20% likelihood you won't be able to speak again. And I was like, they're not that good odds, right? They're not that. I mean, all I do for a living is talk. That's all I do. And then I had a brief experience, I guess, of what it's like to live with a disability because I couldn't talk for 2 weeks. I wasn't allowed to talk for 2 weeks. Yeah. And I carried a sign around with me. And people were just kind of misunderstood what it meant. So I went to, Heathrow Airport and I was trying to get into the business lounge. And they went, you've got your card. And I hadn't got my card. My wife had got my card. And I couldn't really explain because I couldn't talk. And so I showed her the sign. When the sign said, I've just had an operation and therefore I can't talk. And she looked at me and she said, have you got your card to get into the lounge? So it's a brief insight into how stupid people are.
That's good. You live a very showbiz life. You're always going, you know, into airport lounges.
The Groucho Not on that Club. Occasion.
Okay, you can get in, yeah, because your face isn't your fortune in that case. Then it's when you've been you started on Live TV was like 1993 or something.
I don't know, six maybe. I think six for me.
It was the middle, wasn't it? So you've been working fairly constantly on TV and radio.
Yeah, I mean, I've done more radio. Last 10 years, I've done mainly radio. I now live in America, and I sort of live between LA and London, and I'm doing a job in New York for the next 2 months, so I'm sort of living between LA, New York, and London. And the
How's it
Screen
going
Theater.
In America? Have you broken America?
I don't say I've broken America. The first thing I'm doing on air is for ABC. News, which is a show I'm presenting, which starts a week after next. I mean, I went to LA in January and I had two shows to do out there, one of which I had come up with and it had been commissioned. Like, this is quite an extraordinary thing where you come up with a show and it gets commissioned, and the format was mine. It was an interview series, but it was my own format. And we're all set to film it. It's in New York for American telly. And my visa got held up at the embassy and I couldn't get my passport back. And so I had to, 5 days out, I had to cancel the whole show, which cost a TV production company 200 grand. And there were 5 crews and the edit suites were booked. And it's kind of you know how hard it is to get an idea away.
Yeah.
The first meeting I had in America, I get an idea away and it's commissioned and it's happening. It will never happen again in my life. And I had to cancel the whole thing. The guest, who's a very, very, very famous comedian, was already in New York. They're all there. And so, and I was partly moving there on that basis. And then there's a second show I couldn't do for a similar reason. So I had a weird start. And then I've then diverted back here. So I think I've flown back to London 9 times this year. So I've been all over the shop.
Yeah. You did Steve Wright's show, was that right?
Sometimes fill in for Simon Mayo on the Radio 2 Drive Time show.
Yeah.
And I got you on because I like you.
Did you fly back especially to do the Simon Mayo show from, or were you in London anyway at that point?
I don't think BBC Radio really pays enough.
I am not paying over £130 a year to have you flown over from America to do a show that... They could just put an old one out with Simon Mayo, couldn't they? It's the same every day. That's good, I listen to that afternoon because often I'm driving, and and sometimes I listen to Steve Wright. Same show every day. I like him a lot, but it's just the same thing. And then Simon Mayo, it's almost exactly the same show. They could, I really think they could save some money by just repeating them on a year. Just wait, it's Easter. Put out the Easter one. His audience aren't going
to
know.
I mean, it's very difficult for me to comment, Richard, because I quite like filling in there and I quite like to work for Radio 2 in the long term. Okay. So I'll just let you talk and I will observe.
It's incredible Steve Wright has still got that job, though, isn't it?
Well...
I mean, there's no getting him out of there, but he's got that for life, hasn't he?
He's got a lot of listeners.
I know, but it's great. I mean, I listen to him. I really like him. I think he's one of the best radio interviewers there is as well.
Yeah.
But it's just incredible. It's just incredible that just goes on.
It's phenomenal radio in terms of how many people listen. Steve Wright gets like 7 million listeners or something. It's an amazing number of people who are listening to a radio at 2 in the afternoon. Mm. Isn't it?
It is, but it's the same, exactly the same. Like to when the music plays, where the fake cheers come in. Yeah. What I like about it is...
I'm just observing. I'm not commenting.
I listen to it. I'm just fascinated by it. But I really like Steve Wright. But fucking hell, he's lucky. What a lucky bastard. Did you keep the Blue Peter annual that got pulped after you were sacked from the show? Because that's worth a lot of money now.
Yeah, I've got one somewhere, I think. When you get sacked from Blue Peter, it's a bit like losing your job with the LAPD because you have to hand in your badge.
Yeah.
It's a really sad moment. I don't think I did keep the annual, but they did pulp it because it turned out it had, some of the headlines sounded like they could be puns for taking drugs. There was one about snow. There was there was a chapter called Racing the Dragon, and that was, they had to get rid of it.
I saw some people on Facebook discussing Blue Peter annuals, and they said that they're all quite... common apart from that one, so that one is worth. If you've got one, if you could sign it as well, it's probably going to be worth even more. If you could sign it with some cocaine, you burn some cocaine onto the front cover. You're both quite candid about the fact you wrote the film reviews for the Sunday People, but you didn't ever go and see the films or write the reviews yourself.
In my book, I did talk about that, which I thought was brave in a way, because I thought maybe people will think I've not written the book if I'm writing about not writing my newspaper column. But I did write the book, but the People column. So the People is a Sunday newspaper. I've no idea if it's still going. And I had the film column in there. And when I got the job, I thought, you can imagine thinking, oh, that's quite an exciting job. You know, you see 3 films a week and then you just write essays about them. And that sounds like a lovely job. And so I did it. And after about 3 weeks, actually going to a screening at 2 in the afternoon to watch most films are terrible. It turns out that most films are terrible.
They are terrible.
Anyway, when you get the job, you make the mistake of thinking every film is Spectre, right? But actually, a lot of them are about a dog coming down from space or something. You know, they're just nonsense. And so I would go see the film and write the column for 3 weeks. Then on the third week, I got my friend to go and see the films, and then we'd like sit and write the films together, and then I got bored of that. And so I just got him to go to the cinema and write the column. Then he got bored of going to the cinema as well. So he used to sort of write them from having read some other stuff on the internet. And then not only did I not write my film column, I didn't read it either. And I remember walking through Soho and a director came up to me and he said, I'm a director. And he made a film. It was called something like Bike Ride to Brighton or something. I mean, this is what I mean about not every film is Spectre. And he came up to me and he was really upset and he just said, why didn't you like my film? And I said, what film again? And I said, it was, you have to remind me, it was too short, too long. And there was another time when I was sitting outside a restaurant somewhere near Soho and there was a film PR I recognised. And I said, why are you here? And she said, downstairs in the private room beneath where we are, Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock are in there. They're having a party. They've got a new film out. I think it was called Lake House, The Lake House. She said, it's a party for The Lake House. And I said, right. I quite like to go to that party. Is it a good film? This was a Monday. And she said, you wrote about it yesterday, Richard. And then she said... And then she said, would you like to know what you thought about it? And I said, might as well. Tell me. Caught red-handed. And she said, you didn't like it very much. And no, you're not going to the party.
There's quite a chancerous element to chance. You're quite a chancer, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is this element with show business of that. Obviously, there's fakery within all elements of show business and journalism. But, you know, you presume you're still taking some of the money between...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You could potentially make a good living not doing anything. You could be sitting back on the bacon brand.
I very much doubt. I mean, if I did a column again, I would write it. I'm just very bored of writing about films, but... I suspect there are some columnists out there who have their columns written, don't you?
Well, I think my friend Emma Kennedy, who many of you are aware of, used to do film reviews, and I don't think it was you either. She said there was someone quite famous who never went to the screenings, was never at the screenings.
Never at the screenings,
And never wrote their own things.
I think quite a few of the... You know when they get famous footballers to do columns? I'm not sure that they're writing any of those. They probably call them, don't they? Someone calls them from the news desk. What do you think to this? And then puts a phone, a one-minute phone call, and then they...
Danny Dyer got into trouble, I think, didn't he? He did a column in a newspaper, like it was an agony aunt kind of column in one of the magazines.
Yeah.
And then one of them turned out to be something about basically beat up your girlfriend.
He was, yes, I remember that.
And then he probably hadn't written that himself or read it himself.
Yeah.
And so that's the danger. Just be careful if you do it again. Yeah. You don't get caught out. How's Una Stubbs to work with? Did you have a nice time?
Oh, yeah, I presented an art show. She's lovely, Stubbs. She's like a 76-year-old Shoreditch hipster.
Right.
You know, she just dresses brilliantly. She's lovely and cool. I got her around, so we co-presented a show in which 10 people, so there's two judges, 10 people, and they paint, and one gets eliminated every week, and at the end of it, someone wins. And it's the bake-off, right, basically. Yeah. We just didn't say it like that. I didn't explain it like that at the time. But... yeah, she came around to my house and we had dinner before we shot it. And then I deliberately put on that episode of Fawlty Towers that she's in. Do you remember the one? It's the one where Sybil is ill in bed. And so I find it quite... To me, I find Una Stubbs really quite iconic.
She was in Wurzel Gummidge.
Yeah, I know. Don't you find anyone who was in Fawlty Towers is quite exciting to me?
Because
you were there. Oh, my God, you were in the room when that happened, that thing happened.
Yeah. It is exciting. Most of them are dead now.
Oh.
It's terrible. That's what I think about all the time, unfortunately. Are you ever confused with the English Tory politician Richard Bacon?
Yeah. So there's the South Norfolk MP, Richard Bacon.
Yeah.
I wonder if he ever gets confused for me. I wonder if they ever don't let him into the House of Commons. It's dragged away by the parliamentary police. I do get a lot. I mean, sometimes I get his mail. So, yeah, South Norfolk MP, and I get his mail, and occasionally I write back. It is, you know, it's a fascinating insight into the world of being an MP, because it is, you know, people writing about how their pipes are leaking from their house. I mean, I think that is the reality of being a backbench MP. I used to want to be an MP.
Did you?
Yeah. I did. And I'm quite glad that instead of being an MP and dealing with people's leaky pipes, I'm just arsing around. I mean, that's my career does feel like, essentially, I just mess around the whole time.
You know, it's, I mean, you've done lots of great things.
No, I have. Well, I've done some quite good things, and I've done some nonsense. You know,
but it's good. It's good to be. That's good. That's not a bad thing. But it's sort of. It's. I think people. It's sort of interesting because I think there's this level of really famous people in show business who you assume are billionaires and millionaires, and then there's a level of people in show business who you wouldn't think were millionaires. But I know how much you paid for your house in 2002 because it's in your book. So I know.
Oh, it's worth a lot more than that now, Richard.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. I know. I was looking in Chiswick in 2002, so I know how expensive that house was.
Belsize Park. Yeah, so what is your point that I'm relatively wealthy?
You're doing really well, aren't you?
I mean, I am.
Well, you've worked constantly for all that time, I suppose. So that it's kind of interesting, I think, that's all. I'm just interested. Well, are you ever confused with HMS Richard Bacon, the ship?
Is there a ship called HMS Richard Bacon?
Can you not know that?
How could I not know that?
I'd take my son. If I had a son and there was a ship named after me, I would take my son to that ship and go, that is my ship. Let's go on there anytime. Are you ever mistaken for Richard Mackenzie Bacon, the English Whig journalist and musician from the 18th century?
No, but I look, the fact that you've done this research, I typed Richard Bacon into Google.
Into Wikipedia, it's not even
Wikipedia,
that.
Okay, thanks. It's quite moving.
Yeah.
You know, and quite boring.
There's another one. There was another one, I think, but I didn't bother writing it down. Tell us about Plate Spinning Bob. That's a good story.
Well, that was on The Big Breakfast. That was... God, I used to love working on The Big Breakfast. So I got sacked from Blue Peter, got that job. And I was... My main job on The Big Breakfast... I was out on the road. So I think there were jobs I've done well and jobs I haven't done well. I think I was good at that one. That was going around the country, knocking on doors, live in the morning. 7 a.m., or about 10 past 7 would be the first hit, as we called it. And a lot of it, I did Streaky Bacon. And we'd often be on council estates. And I'd knock on the door and I'd say, do you want to, in an hour, 10 past 8 in the morning, do you want to streak down your own street? We'll get all your neighbours out. And if you do it, you run down naked, your private parts are covered by a plastic bit of bacon, and if you're willing to do it, you will win your own body weight in bacon. Everyone said yes. Everyone said yes. And then... I'd say, your body weight in bacon looks revolting. And what would happen is we'd pack up and we'd get like the local mayor to hand it over, and they'd win, and then, you know, show's over at 9 o'clock, and we'd have to give them their weight in bacon. And it turned out they'd all have like these tiny freezers, and we'd have to go into the house and they'd have no way of storing all of this disgusting raw meat. Not organic meat, just cheap rubbish. And Plate Spinning Bob was a guy who was on my very first outside broadcast for The Big Breakfast. And he turned up as a big day for me because I was being sacked. I've got to, you know... He very much wanted to go well. And Johnny Vaughan was the presenter at the time, who I really admire and was a mentor to me. But he made snap decisions. And so your first outside broadcast is, well, if he doesn't like me, I'm gone, right? So you're very anxious. And we'd booked a plate spinner for a feature called... I imagine it was called Bringing Home the Bacon.
Yeah.
And it was, I'd knock on the door and for some reason we took this plate spinner to someone's house. And so we booked him from Liverpool and he turned up at 6 a.m. We're on air at 7. And he turned up and he's called Bob. I said, hi, Bob. Really excited. My first day. Let's do this. And then he opened the boot of his car and he said, I've forgotten my plates. And I was like, it's like sort of an aide memoir built into your job title. I mean, he's Plate Spinning Bob. So he'd... I mean, it's only if all we've got to bring are sticks and fucking plates, right? He brought the sticks. So I thought, well, I can't, it's my first OB and I don't want Johnny to not like me and I've just got to go well. So I knocked on a different door because we couldn't knock on the door where they surprise people.
No.
And I said, oh, this is a really weird question. I know it's 6 a.m, I've got you out of bed. I'm about to go and surprise those people for television and a plate's been a son of pink on the pitch. Is there any chance that I could use your plates? And so they gave us their plates from their kitchen. And I gave them to Bob. And then Bob said, oh, but the problem is, it turns out You can't just put any plates on the sticks when you plate spin. Yeah. They have to have a little indentation. So we then had to borrow someone's drill and we put these indentations in the bottom of the plates. And then we did the feature and every single... Because they were just the wrong plates for his sticks. And they all just fell off. One by one by one. They all just fell off and smashed. And it was brilliant because it was a disaster. And so we had this idea, which is we'd take him to Vegas. And I called up the circus hotel in Vegas and I lied and I said, we've got this plate spinner in Britain and he is sensational. And he's a huge hit on breakfast telly and you have to book him. So I got him the main stage at Circus for like 1,000 people and we filmed it and I went on and introduced him. And we can swear on here. Do you know what I mean? The producer was a bit cunt-like. This time, he didn't forget his plates, but he couldn't bring them on the plane because they were too heavy. So we went and bought the plates from when we got there, and we deliberately bought really heavy plates. Anyway, it was another disaster. And for that reason, it was brilliant.
Is he all right now? Has he recovered from this? Did he enjoy himself?
I shouldn't have admitted that thing about buying the heavy plates. Although it has weighed heavy on my mind for a while. You're very good at getting these confessions out of people, Richard.
I am, yeah. That one's going to rank up there. Expect that'll be on the Australian news tomorrow. I'll ask you an emergency question. If you had to go on holiday with one of the puppets from the Spitting Image show... But which puppet would you choose? Bear in mind that the puppet chooses the holiday destination. You don't have no choice over that. And also the puppeteer and the voiceover artist would come to operate it and make it speak, but you would never be able to interact with them as people.
Well, this requires a level of knowledge Spitting Image I don't really have, because I would need to know who did the voices of each, I need to think about it properly. I need to give you a serious and a thoughtful answer. I need to give it the answer it deserves, Richard.
Do you want to come back next week?
Yeah, let's come back next week. Yeah.
Okay.
The Roy Hattersley puppet was funny.
Yeah. Well, would it be funny for a week though? a week. And I'll give you. I'm gonna water there. You still enjoying it?
I think you are belittling the impressionist's art there, Richard. It's a craft.
I'm Roy Hattersley. No one knows what I sound like.
Is Spitting Image funny if you go back and watch it?
I wrote for Spitting Image. I did write about 2 sketches for Spitting Image. I didn't think it was as good as everyone went made out. I thought it sort of started... There were some controversies, weren't they, early on? They did, the Queen Mother as Beryl Reed, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then that was like, oh! Which is amazing. When you think about it, that's incredible that there was a point where the press would have gone crazy about someone doing a quite nice, gentle parody of the Queen Mother. But that was a big moment. There was definitely brilliant things in Spitting Image. But it all comes back. It's one of those things. It's the Del Boy falling through the...
Car. Yeah, it comes back.
It's the... what about the vegetables? They'll have the same as me, isn't it? That's what it boils down to.
But I think the portrayal of John Major with Norma being pushing the peas around the plate and being really great, I think that had an impact on how he was perceived. So it sort of came lifted out of comedy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And actually framed how the public saw him.
Well, I think Margaret Thatcher herself was... I think she looked strong through that, through those puppets. I think it was difficult for me because I was writing a lot of topical comedy at the time as I started my career.
Yeah.
And I didn't have much respect for it as an art form because it's quite formulaic.
Do you mean that generally for writing topical comedy?
No, not entirely, but a lot of those sketches were quite... we'd write for Weekending, which was a lot worse than Spitting Image. I think Spitting Image had lots of good things in it. But it was, people would go back and basically the same writers would write the same... You'd have, I wrote on Weekending for a year and a half and you'd be able to, within 6 months, you'd be able to pitch the same sketch with a different main person in it or just slightly, it got a bit formulaic.
So in summary, Spitting Image, a bit shit.
Wait a minute, hold on. It's got no water. I don't think it's it's weird. There's lots of comedy things that are of their time, and I think maybe comedy should be of its time. There are things that become classics, and 30 years on, people are still watching them. And the things that like Gavin and Stacey was in the noughties or whenever it was on, was everyone was going on about it. But now I don't think anyone looks back at Gavin and Stacey and goes, "That is my favourite." Anyone? No, so I mean, maybe they didn't at the time. It might, but it's interesting. Something can be like bang and then disappear, and something can be like Only Fools and Horses, and everyone goes, "That's amazing forever." or Tom Jones by the book by now my brain's not working.
I don't think this podcast will be forever, Richard.
This podcast will go on for...
It certainly feels like it's
going on
forever.
It will go on forever. Yeah. It will go on forever. And we haven't even done an hour yet. I'm hosting the next show on today, so I can make this last as long as I like. I think it was good. I think it was spitting image was quite good. I'll ask you another question. This is another emergency question. See how you get on with this.
Okay.
Kettle crisps are not as nice as they once were. Have I changed or have they? That's not the question. If you could travel back in time to compare any foodstuff of today with an equivalent in the past, A, what food would it be? B, what time would you go to?
Gosh, that's interesting.
Thank you.
So this is... God, that's really good. This is
ironically, I'd quite like to try bacon as well, because I think bacon was better in the 1970s than it is now.
How could it be better than... Why would it be better than the 1970s?
Because it's pumped full of
water then.
Yeah.
I mean, now it's getting there now.
No, it's pumped full of water now. It used to be proper bacon. They'd just slice up a pig and give it to you in those days. Now... The pig wasn't even dead. It was delicious. But what would you choose? It's not up to me.
This is a bit like one of those Giles Corran Sue Perkins kind of food shows, isn't it?
I
refer you to an answer I gave earlier, which is, it was my 40th birthday party last night. I went to bed at 7. Yeah. I'm not sure I even slept then. I've basically come straight here from there, having had a couple more beers on the way.
Yeah.
And I just don't have the brain capacity to think about what food now I would compare with a food stuff from the past. It's not happening.
Have you got any more Richards lined up? Give me some time. All right. Have you ever seen a ghost?
What, do you think I believe in ghosts?
You don't have to believe in one to see them.
Yeah, you do. Now, that conceptually doesn't make any sense. You have to believe in a ghost to see the ghost.
I don't believe in
ghosts.
You
can't see... No, that's not true. You can't say...
I don't believe in ghosts, but if a ghost came in now here and I saw it, I would still see it.
No, but then you don't need one, because you would then... For you to see a ghost, you have to believe it's a ghost, therefore you believe in ghosts. So if you don't believe in ghosts, you've never seen a ghost. Okay. Richard.
I'm prepared to have my viewpoint changed if a ghost comes in. If God came down and said, "Hey, Richard, I am God, and I am real, and this is the correct one book you should be reading about me. Forget the other ones. I don't know why I haven't told everyone this, but I'm telling you." It would sort out a lot of problems if I just said to everyone which one I was. But I like the problems. So I'm not going to tell everyone else. I would then believe in God or think I'd had a psychotic episode.
More likely. But one of my favourite conversations that we've had on the radio is when you were... Because I did this with my parents, being an atheist, where I row with my mum. And you've said the same before, where you row with your parents. Yeah. And at the end, you wonder why you're doing it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because, what are you trying to achieve? You're just trying to make them... they've got some happiness in their life. And also, if you're right, if you manage to convert your parents to atheism and you're wrong and they get to heaven, got to go, "Sorry, you can't come in." They go, "Well, I was religious for 50, for 80 years. Yeah, but then at the end, you change your mind. You've got to go to hell. It works the other way around, which is the beauty of Christianity. We could get to 80 and go, "Oh, no, I do believe now." And then God has to go, "All right."
Isn't that simple?
Yeah, in you come. Is it fine? That is so... Fred West's in heaven, because he probably just said sorry at the end. I reckon Pope John Paul II, probably when he got Alzheimer's at the end, probably went, "I don't believe in this anymore." He's in hell. Because of Alzheimer's disease.
There's clearly going to be a lot better crowd in hell. I think that... But I row with my mum, and I do think, why would I want to win this argument? What am I trying to achieve? So at the end of it, she doesn't believe in God anymore, and then she's a bit less happy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about being right, isn't it?
That's it is basically being right.
Can I prove that I'm right?
Do you know how old Noah lived to be?
Pardon?
Do you know how old Noah?
How old was Noah? He was quite old, wasn't he?
He's like 945.
I think, but isn't a lot of that just that they were trying to make the time frame work? It goes back to Archbishop Usher, who decided that the world began on the 25th of October, you know, sometime BC. Because he'd worked out everything, and I think they had to make certain people certain ages to...
Right.
I think, like, Methuselah probably was in the Bible as being old, but I'm not sure Noah's age was actually in the Bible.
Are you following the American presidential election at all?
Very vaguely, via watching Saturday Night Live sketches, without knowing who they are referring to, which I quite... apart from Donald Trump, who I do.
Yeah. I watch it really closely. It's pretty much all I read. I'm about to start working for ABC News, so we'll be talking about it a lot. But I... it's gripping. And there's a guy called Ben Carson, who's a neurosurgeon, so therefore technically a scientist. And he believes the Earth is, you know, 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
And he thinks the theory of evolution is propagated by... Satan came up with it.
Yeah.
Satan came up with the theory of evolution. And he's a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
And it's kind of it's just a baffling concept. He's a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
He did there's a brilliant humorous piece in The New Yorker. I think it was a sort of ironic piece. But it was about where other brain surgeons have come forward and say, this is just such good news. This takes the pressure off us. Because we're brain surgeons, people think we're like super bright, and we know everything, and we go to dinner parties, and it's exhausting. And at last, they realise we only know one thing.
All the pressure is back on the rocket scientists now. It is great, but it's incredible. But then I think, the American the way all democracy is going now makes me think that democracy is probably not the right way to have a political system in the modern world. Because A, people start voting because of TV, people start voting in idiots like they would vote. You know, it started with Big Brother, and then now Donald Trump is genuinely a potential president of the United States. And so that's insane because. And that people are then voicing an opinion. You know, we're going to decide whether we leave the European Union or not based on whether you think it's a good idea or not.
Based on public opinion, which is not very well informed.
Yeah, well, you know, they don't know. No one knows whether it's going to be better for them or worse. It's almost certainly going to be much worse for everyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, because they don't like people coming. They don't like foreign people.
Yeah, no.
Did you ever think of doing Francis Bacon when you went to France?
They've been to France. No.
Said hello to French people on Big Breakfast. Francis Bacon.
God, this is very similar to this level of conversation I was having about half.
It was. Look, neither of us have had any sleep.
Yeah.
You because you've been having fun. Me because I've been cleaning snot off the face of a idiot child that I created, that I now regret creating. I thought I was a god. I thought, look at that, I've done this amazing thing, and then I'm too hot. I might die and it'll be your fault. She doesn't say that. She can't speak, but that's...
Do you secretly think you were happier before you had a child?
I don't know. I was very unhappy before I had a child. Now slightly less unhappy, but still unhappy. I know, I really
I love my kids, but I'm no more or less happy.
I like it a lot, but I think I left it later, and so I absolutely got everything out of my system. So I'm absolutely ready to have children, and I really like it. Even when she's ill, the thing is, oh God, this is horrible. She's ill and she doesn't understand what's going on. Yeah. Really,
there must be quite a lot of people who secretly were happier before they had kids.
Oh, but
it's just a thing you can't say, right? But there's loads of research about this that's come out, which shows that parents are at their happiest before they have kids and when their kids leave home.
Right,
but no one says that. No one puts their name to that opinion.
No.
And it's about time someone did.
Are you the man to
do it? Well, I'm getting close to it.
There's a lot that's annoying about it. But I think, I'll be dead by the time she leaves home. I'm in this for life.
Mm.
So that's quite good. There's no way out of this prison, you know. I've got to stay with my wife, really. However well we're getting on.
Yeah.
Probably just have some more kids just to, you know, make fill up the time. I think a lot of people aren't. I know if I'd had kids when I was 20, I think I'd have, or you know, in my 20s, or probably even my 30s, I probably would have harboured regrets. But I don't, because I felt like I'd had enough of all the other stuff. And it's great. I really, really like being a dad. But it's new, isn't it, for me? I mean, it's only 10 months in, so.
I don't want to go too far in case my wife chooses or my mother-in-law chooses to download, or my children.
the children will download it. It's always going to be there on the internet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when they're 18, I'm going to email them the link. I'm not going to do it before then.
Dad wishes still... you'd never been born.
You know, it's, they're annoying.
Yeah.
They are. I think there'll be more for them to resent. I mean, I feel sorry that the world's going to be awful for them. That's my fear, is that either the climate or the World War III and the radiation that's going to be coming with that, the threat of terrorism and all dying.
Can we get back to the Richard Bacons and the dicks on the island?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll ask you another emergency question. Yeah. It's not with this good. We got to the point now that just, we don't usually get to at about in about another 20 minutes, but there's time for us to get through it at the moment, so that's good.
Go on.
Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
Well, is that to the,
that was the question
B and the
that
F
I was
have
gonna...
capital letters or
no? It's a Bigfoot, the Sasquatch I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah.
No. Okay. Which celebrity would you like to stroke your hair as you die?
It's quite a nice thought.
Yeah. These are hard questions for a man who hasn't had any sleep, but you know.
Yeah. Well, have you answered that question yourself?
I chose Bouncer the dog from Neighbours for some reason, because I think I was in a similar state of, you know, being out of my head with drunkenness or tiredness or something when I answer that. But I would quite just be quite nice to.
Yeah. And does Bouncer the dog count as a celebrity?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, to be honest, if I had the choice between you and Bouncer the dog to interview now, fucking Bouncer the dog would be there, man. So.
Gosh.
And he would be a more eloquent and polite guest. You've been very good, Richard. I'm only joking. I've had a long time.
But I realise I haven't answered your question.
No.
Tina Hobley.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Tina Hobley. Yeah,
Someone applauded there. I did, thanks. I slightly pulled the name out of thin air. / I used to have a sarcastic feature about her on XFM called How's Tina Hobley, in which my friend would impersonate Tina Hobley. And I would call up my friend impersonating her and I would say, "Hello, Tina, how are you?" And he'd tell me how she was. And that was the entire basis of the whole feature. It's very good. I mean, I wouldn't say that show ever won an award, Richard. No. I mean, that would be obviously an exaggeration.
It's not up with Desert Island Dicks as an idea.
No. But Tina Hobley is my answer.
Okay, that's good. I think that'd be nice. And I think she will outlive you as well.
Yeah.
Bouncer has not outlived me, as I'm guessing. I'm guessing Bouncer. There might have been several Bouncers.
Tina Hobley was at my birthday party last night.
Was she?
No, you're jealous.
I am jealous. Why was I?
No, you're thinking, why didn't I make the cut?
Why wasn't I invited? You get on saying, "Oh, you know, it'll be my 40th birthday party the day before the podcast." Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
One of us had to have some energy, Richard. That's the important thing.
It's true, and unfortunately, neither of us do. You are the most controversial Top of the Pops presenter there has ever been. And I've been a Top of the Pops presenter as well, so that you even topped me in that you...
Have you?
Yeah, I did it twice. You called the magic numbers fat.
Well, I didn't, Richard, as you well know. So the magic numbers came on Top of the Pops, and for some reason this day it was live, and I was rehearsing with Fern Cotton, who I was co-presenting with, and they were standing behind us. And the link, which had been written for me, said that they're a family and they're a big melting pot of talent. And I ad-libbed. I said they're a big, fat melting pot of talent. But I meant P-H-A-T, Richard. And, well, I actually did mean that. I don't really believe me. I did mean that. And it was in dress rehearsals. And they walked off. They did the song for the rehearsal. They got off stage and they went to their dressing room. They're very upset. And they decided that they were going to leave. And so the executive producer came up to me and said, like, they're going, and we're live in, you know, 40 minutes, and that's like, we've got a big hole in the show. We're on BBC One in 40 minutes, and the band are walking out. And so I thought, well, I said, it was Andy Peters who was the exec producer at the time, remember, the kids presenter. And I said, Andy, I'll let me go and smooth this over. And so I found their tour manager, and I said, can I go and speak to the band? And he said, absolutely not. So I thought, I'll make a pitch to him. And I said, look, you know, I didn't mean it with an F. I meant it with a PH. I hadn't even seen him.
You know, they're like, the eyes looking at the camera. I don't even know what shape they were. So I didn't mean it. And they're, you know, they're a great band. And, you know, we've got a hole in the show. Great opportunity for your band, of course, to be on Top of the Pops. So why don't you stay? And then, oh, there's a word in here that I can't even, I don't think you even use on a podcast, but
you said.
Can I?
Yeah.
All right. Do you know what the word is?
No, but you can use any motherfucking word you want.
All right. He said, what you just did is the equivalent of having a black band on and introducing them as a bunch of niggers.
Oh, no, you can't say that.
I seem to have now got myself into trouble twice with the same incident. The same incident. Haunting me.
That's it, you're quoting someone else.
Yeah, that's true.
That's so
true. That's true.
You'll still be in trouble though, because for some reason everyone just wants to get you, don't they? But they don't. They don't get you. You survive. You're like us. You are like Jesus. You're my personal Jesus.
Can I just say, for legal reasons, I think it was a tour manager, but it could have been any number of people associated with the band. Could have been any number, may not specifically have been whoever was a tour manager at that day.
It seems very oversensitive of the magic numbers.
I thought so.
To like walk off the show. I mean, like, it's stupid of them as well, because it's Top of the Pops.
Yeah, it was great for them.
And also, when we did Top of the Pops, no one could. We were really rude about everyone, like, and we were allowed to write our own links. No one could. We do E17 were, you know, like behind us.
Yeah.
And we were just saying what we wanted about E17 and going like that, and talking about how Brian Harvey had bought a big pack of. He said, we've been talking to Brian Harvey earlier on. He said he isn't a millionaire. He said to the producer, he's not a millionaire, but I couldn't help noticing he was eating a large bag of minstrels or Maltesers. So we were quite rude about them.
But then I think maybe people would expect that of a comedian.
Maybe.
Rather than just
they couldn't hear us, that's all it was.
You know, sometimes you don't quite know what's going to become a story. Let's say that band walked out. And the next day, it was picked up on by a lot of the newspapers,
right. And
which surprised me. And then you don't, when it's in the newspapers, you have that slight nervousness of, I don't quite know where this is going. They very handily petered out. But that night, so it was in the papers that day, and that night on Channel 4 News, which I just happened to have on, and it's obviously a very light news day. And so imagine numbers have walked out, and it's towards the end of Channel 4 News, obviously. And Jon Snow, said, a picture of me came up behind him. And he said, former Blue Peter presenter Richard Bacon strikes again. and then I was number one. I was number one that year of the NME had, it was called the top 10 like cunts list or something. Yeah. And I was number one. Pretty good. I mean, you're going to be in it.
It seems strange that these things come back to. Do you think it's something about you that?
I think that there's quite a lot of chaos about me. I mean, I did quite a chaotic life, and I think
you're really. I really like you a lot. I have to say that. I think you're very funny. But why is it? Why are all these things? Do you think it's just because that first thing? It's very. It's very difficult, and it's a good idea going to America, isn't it? Is this part of your reasoning that no one there knows
any of this
about
nonsense?
That? Well, any of those things, but the Blue Peter won't mean anything to them. So that's nice to be able to start again, because you've got like this thing that will all whatever when you die, whatever else you've done. You say this in the book, anyway. But whatever else you've done, that will be the first thing they say about you.
Yeah, I mean, if I like,
unless you like kill some kids or something. That's your only way out of. That's your only way out of it. I mean, calling the magic numbers fat is not enough. That's what I'm saying. You didn't go far enough. If you'd said the magic numbers aren't actually magic, that might have been more controversial.
That's not the reason you're going to America. But in meetings in America, when you go meet TV people there, they love that Blippied story.
Right.
I mean, they actually just find it really funny, and it doesn't impede you in any way. They just think it's great. The reason for going to America was more. We wanted to live in LA for a bit. And my wife was a nanny to the Motley Crue in Malibu when she was 18. And so she has this kind of romantic attachment, as you can imagine, to...
It's
exciting, right? And so we wanted to go back there. So, no, that wasn't the reasoning.
and I'm so tired I don't know where I'm going with this statement.
Okay, it's fine.
I did have a destination,
yeah,
but it sort of dropped away.
That's fine. It's all right.
We're having a nice time.
We're two men. Nearly enough. I could say enough 40s, but you're not in your 40s yet.
Midnight
you'll
tonight.
You'll never know what it feels like to be.
I know what I was. Richard, I know what I was going to say.
Yeah, well, I'm saying.
That there's strange things happen to me, or these silly things, or cartoony things, or whatever you want to call them. But there's quite a lot of chaos in my life. And last night at my 40th birthday party, I paid a tribute to my mum and dad who were there. Because I thought, well, it's 40 years ago since they had me. And I was talking about them, and it sort of made me realize that. The sort of the chaos that surrounds me, I've just got from them, and that they are all over the shop. I mean, my mum the other day was on a train and she was drunk, and she was meant to get off at Newark, and she fell asleep, and she woke up and she was in Chesterfield, and she got off the train. It was too late to get a train back. There were no more trains back, and she was drunk, and so she decided to sleep the night on the platform. And then the other day, my mum and dad were walking in Chiswick House and Grounds, and they hadn't noticed the time, and they got locked in, and they had to get rescued over the wall by the fire brigade. And then not long ago, my dad drove to Birmingham Airport, and he was late as usual, and he put his car in the Chorlestay car park. And he looked at his watch, and it was 55 minutes until the flight took off, and he thought, I reckon I can make this flight. And then he opened the boot of his car, and the dog was in there. So it's in the genes, Rich. Yeah. You see what I mean? It's in the genes. My dad would have done that magic number thing if he'd been presenting. Yeah. It's in the genes.
In the genes. But it doesn't, you know, nothing it sticks, and everyone still, you know, you still work and everyone still likes you. Yeah.
Well, I don't think everyone
you've been punched in the face in a toilet, but apart from that, everyone likes you.
Yeah, that's true. That was my now wife's ex-boyfriend. Yeah. But it's not everyone likes me, but I still work. And I think, I think at the moment, I mean, my 30s were a lot of fun, right? I mean, because
not over yet, Richard.
They're not over yet.
Something could go horribly wrong, or even better.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know what happens next, really. And I'm not as anxious as I should be about it, but I'm turning 40. I'm working in America, but I don't know if it's going to work out, and I start then in a couple of weeks. But I don't know where I'm going to be or what's going to happen. But it's certainly something new is happening now. And probably I should finally learn from my mistakes. I think it's time. And certainly if I'm going to do sensible stuff over there, there may need to be a new version of me that emerges. I just don't know whether I've got the sort of the willpower or the capacity to find it.
Well, when I send them the copy of this podcast over and what you said earlier, which I can only apologise for, you will never work in America again.
It's not filmed, is it?
It is filmed.
So there's footage of me saying it anyway.
And to be honest, I'm just going to cut out everything else you said, and every answer to every question is just you going to be repeating that over and over again.
I'm going to be working for ABC News, and there's footage of me on YouTube saying the N-word. Yeah. This is
Who do you blame for all the world's problems, Richard?
A bunch of.
Don't say it again. It makes my job much easier.
Well, if nothing else, at least I've got another chapter for a future book, Richard. It's another incident. Former Blue Peter presenter Richard Bacon strikes yet again. Yet again.
Anyway, we're going to have to wind up because I have to now introduce the new act of the year 2015 competition, which I'm doing now. And here, can hang around if you want to watch it here. Not you at home, it's past. So come and see the next year's one. Thank you very much to my 100th guest and fine man here. What's your name? Thank you very much. I've been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Richard Bacon. The music is by Pess. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Stripe. They are very nice. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having me here. on a Sunday afternoon. Well, let's do it on Mondays from now on, though. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide for helping us out, and for Ian Tunes, who runs iTunes, and for letting us put our stuff up there for free as well, and anywhere else that this podcast ends up being. It's nice. Thank you. The producer is Dave Cribb. I am Richard Herring. I do this voiceover at the end. And it is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Thank you for listening to this series of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. As I may have mentioned at the start, that is 100 episodes of this podcast that are now available, plus a few specials as well. So if you feel that you've enjoyed those and that they were worth anything to you, were they worth one pence each to you, those podcasts? If so, go to gofasterstripe.com/badges and buy a badge for £1. And you will have paid for those 100 podcasts. You might think they were worth a pound each, in which case go and give £100 at that site. You may think they were worth £10 each. You can do the mathematics, but, you know, or you might think they were worth nothing. Or you might think that I owe you some money, in which case get in touch with me and tell me how much you think you've lost through listening to this, and I will send you a check for whatever amount you think is reasonable. GoFasterStripe.com/badges, and that will help us. All that money will go to help us making more series of this podcast. We'll be back in June. I think these are going to carry on. We've got some repeats to push out on the video at least, so they're pretty much going to carry on coming out on a weekly basis. But we'll be back in June, and then there's some more in the autumn, and I'm sure we'll be doing a Kickstarter for those as well. So thanks for listening. 100 years old today. Thank you very much. It was one a year we did. Goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.